Hello and welcome to Series 1 of the podcast The Heart of Teaching, produced by Hibernia College. My name is Aoife Lynham, teacher and researcher, and in this podcast I speak with educators from a variety of fields and ask them about the teachers who inspired them to get where they are today. So join us as we meet the inspirational for a little bit of inspiration. Enda Kenny is an Irish Fine Gael politician who served as Taoiseach from 2011 to 2017. He has also been leader of Fine Gael, Minister for Defence, Leader of the Opposition, Minister for Tourism and Trade, and Minister of State for Youth Affairs. However, what people might not know is that Enda actually spent 4 years working as a primary school teacher. So today I want to gain an insight into this side of Enda and any gems of advice that he can share with us about his journey. Okay, Enda, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it. And I suppose you need no introduction, and everyone will really know you in terms of the immense role that you've played within the Irish government. But what people might not know is that you were a qualified primary school teacher and you taught for 4 years. So could you tell us a little bit about, maybe looking back on that time, why did you decide to become a teacher?
I think the first thing that I find it hard to believe myself is that it's actually 50 years, a half a century since I did my leaving certificate in Castlebar, County Mayo. And the world has changed utterly in so many ways since then. So having cycled into school in St. Gerald's College, I did my leaving cert. Actually, I signed on for science in what was then University College Galway, now NUIG Galway. And having done that, I then got a call to training. Actually, the training college in St. Pat's in Drumcondra was a 2-year course then. It was during the course of those 2 years that some older students who might have graduated from university actually came and joined some of those classes. It was the beginning of the movement for different kinds of teachers. So I was just 17 years of age going in there and came out at 19 years of age as a principal teacher. So actually, if the truth be known, you know, you learn more about life and about human nature in teaching than you actually taught. So it was a point of engaging with pupils from two sides of the country, because I taught for 6 weeks out in Skerries during the summer, as most young students did. And then jobs were offered and you went for interview and so on. So I taught in the west of Ireland. But I think one thing that really stands out for me is that the training that we got as young teachers was to understand the basics of how you present a case. What is your objective in talking to the people or to the students? What is the adventure of curiosity that you bring them on? How do you stimulate them to follow through themselves? And, you know, they say that the best teachers are those who tell you where to look, but not what you see. In other words, discover yourself. So if the human mind, and we know this now, is so capable of following through on its own inquisitiveness and curiosity and the adventure of learning, if you can inspire that kind of interest among pupils, that's where you should be. That great teacher and playwright from Listowel, Brian McMahon, used to say that every child has a flower. Every child's got a gift. It's your job as the teacher to sort of identify what that is and let it bloom. So even in today's sophisticated world of instant communications, the power and the impact of the person standing in front of a group of students is quite immense. I remember the movie Goodbye, Mr. Chips, and Peter O'Toole said in that, when speaking to the students before they left, he said, "Each one of you leaves here with a little bit of me." So the personality and the character, the sort of interests that are sparked off, have all to be tempered with a sense of justice for all the pupils, because they have a capacity to measure you in a way that few others can. Are you being fair to me? Are you being, you know, creating favourites among other students? Their sense of justice is very, very fine. It's important that in their own way you treat them all the same.
And you speak so beautifully about the way in which, you know, a teacher can be and should be and can inspire young people. Was there anyone when you were in school that really inspired you?
Well, we got the track of the old rod on the backs of the legs and across the hands, right up along the line. But yeah, I remember I had a number of teachers. I suppose principal teacher who was in the school had played for Mayo way back in the 20s and used to speak about people travelling the world. There weren't any sophisticated aids for teaching those times. So you did your mental arithmetic and you did all the stuff for the primary certificate exam that every student had to do in English and in Irish and in mathematics. So you learned the rudiments of algebra and geometry and things that are very, very different than now. But he used to speak about the world and, in his own way, all he had was a set of old encyclopedias, and on rainy days, students could look at these pictures from Burma or Australia, places that you could only dream about the names. We did have, unorthodox teachers in different subjects in secondary school, but I think probably one who was who had a great interest in students was Eamon Nally. He was a Latin teacher. I did Latin at second level. And his interest in Roman history and the Roman battles and the way that life was then was always very interesting. And in later years, having had the opportunity and indeed the privilege of going to Italy and to Rome, both on official business and on holidays, and see some of these places, he had a great way of stimulating interest in his subject for students. Other teachers had different ways of imparting their knowledge, sometimes across the palms of your hands, to your detriment.
And obviously, things have changed so drastically, and it's, you know, even to think back on times like that, it's hard for even me to imagine. But I know my parents telling similar stories and similar things that might have happened. So I suppose thinking back on challenging experience, was there anything during your time teaching that you found challenging?
Absolutely. I recall a couple of cases where it's important that you understand that when the group that I was trained with in St. Patrick's in Drumcondra emerged onto the teaching scene, we were the first group to have what was then the new curriculum as the basis for teaching. So it was the beginning of changing methods of teaching. But you didn't have the sophistication or indeed the knowledge that you have now. So I remember, dealing with a number of pupils who had particular problems, be they autistic, be they disadvantaged in one way or another, dyslexic, or whatever. We didn't have the capacity to deal with those particular problems in the way that people can now because of the research and the science and the understanding of the way people learn and the complications that they may have personally in their little lives. I always felt sort of inadequate about that. On the other hand, you meet some of the students and some of the boys and girls who would have taught all those years ago, and you still see them as when they were children. You mightn't have seen them for 40 years. Now they're adults with their own families in different parts of the world, and they recall their teaching days. And I would hope that, back along the line, that you try to stimulate them to have an interest in life, to appreciate nature, to appreciate everybody else, and that we can do so much more by cooperation than by division.
Mm-hmm. And was there one aspect of teaching that was your absolute favourite that made it maybe a little bit hard to leave that career? Was there something that you remember?
I think the favourite aspect of it would be in understanding that they're watching you, but they want you to lead them on a little journey here. So whether that be in storytelling or in experiments or whatever the subject might be, that if you can create the spark that they will follow through, it's really important. And you can see that now even more so today, where the influence of teachers is so important, be it in the modern requirements of corporates coming here, quantum physics, data analytics, logistics, artificial intelligence. And yet the teachers who have brought present-day students to follow those subjects may have stimulated that interest in mathematics or whatever it might be in a way that allowed them to follow through. So you know, years ago, even before I started teaching, sometimes pupils in sixth class learned Latin and Greek and were experienced in history. Well, there were hard times. People didn't have anything except real tough teachers, tough masters. Some of them were really were really very difficult to work with, to put it mildly. So I think for me, to look back, you see, if you see the interest in a child's face, the fascination that I'm on a little journey here to discover some new subject, what it's about, and many of them hopefully have followed on to what is their, you know, their interest and their flower, as it would be, to prove themselves.
Yeah, and the way you describe it, there has been such a shift in the style of teaching that maybe you experienced versus the style of teaching that I experienced. Why do you think that is? Why do you think the world has changed
utterly. I mean, one of our neighbours brought her little baby to the house the other day, just 8 months old, and you could see the little hands and the feet twitching when the colours on the mobile phone in her mother's hand were moving around. We're being out in Seattle with some of the big IT companies. One of the executives was telling me that his 3-year-old daughter was home one evening, and she was putting her hand across the window pane in creating a screen. And he said, "There's no reason why that cannot be, and why that won't be, or will happen in years to come, that every window pane becomes its own screen." So it's moving that fast. So the, you know, instant communications, there is nothing that you cannot find out now of some of the search engines. The answers are there. So what's really important in this sense is that there is now such a surplus of information, much of it unnecessary, that the teacher has got to be able to point out what are the priorities here. What are the really important issues that you are imparting to the students so that they can carry on that journey themselves, rather than have them lost in confusion in mountains of material that are irrelevant to what they're actually doing. So when you look at the world in 2018, moving into the beginnings of explorations in intergalactic space, and on the other side, moving into the nanosphere, which is, you know, beyond the range of the human eye, to millions of degrees now. So the world is getting bigger and smaller at the same time.
Absolutely. And I completely agree with that, in the sense that there's so much material out there that for teachers, you really have to be a critical thinker now, so that you're not with all this fake news and all of this that's going on, to make sure that you're not perhaps teaching, finding material that's wrong and teaching the wrong material.
Absolutely. But, you know, I've had the privilege of opening quite a number of schools over the last number of years, obviously, when in government. But you can see the influence of the different nationalities in the sort of cultural presentation of schools now. And I have to say, I've seen some of the, and been there for the presentations of many of the, you know, the songs and the writings and the drama that schools put together, and the different mix of the cultures in Ireland is quite extraordinary. There are some gifted students out there, and those who participate in those multicultural, multilingual, multi-denominational, multi-racial cooperative ventures are fascinating. And, you know, young people see that as part of the excitement of life. They see it as an adventure. And that's, you know, it's part of the different personality that our country has become and that we should be very proud of.
Mm-hmm. And I think it can only bring more and more positives as time progresses, bringing in different cultures into the teaching profession as well, because I know that that is something that has been topical in the news.
I also think, though, that, you know, as an island nation, we've been an emigrant country for centuries, exacerbated after the Great Hunger in 1845. And in its own peculiar way, one of the consequences of all that tragedy was that you have, you know, 70 million Irish diaspora worldwide, or those who claim to have, you know, their birthright in this country here. And when you look at what's happened in the last 40 years in particular, with the sort of investment that's taken place in the country here, go into any of the major corporations now, today, and you see all the different nationalities that are working there. Well, the Irish competitive spirit rises to the top here. And that's why we can proudly say, you know, that we are a very attractive location because of the talent pool. I opened a facility in Dublin for a young American a number of years ago. And I said to him, well, you know, why did you come to Ireland to set up your company here? Well, he said, you know, I'm from Manhattan, and I it's a cosmopolitan city, and I wanted to come to a cosmopolitan place in Europe. And he said, I've come to Dublin. But he said, what really has driven me to this point, he says, is the quality of the talent pool walking in the door. So young Irish, in my view, along with their counterparts of young Irish and modern Irish now of all nationalities, have no fear of challenging the changing requirements of the frontiers up ahead. And that's the really exciting thing. I think that, you know, giving a country to young people is a sure sign of security for the future. Because if their principles and bedrock are right, then they're going to work to change that for the betterment of humanity in general.
Absolutely. And education is a fantastic place. And the student teachers who are hopefully listening in, that is, you know, that's where it begins. And that's
yes,
where
and the Irish teaching profession is renowned all over the world as being, you know, one of integrity and one of quality and much prized and much sought after. Mm-hmm. And we should be very proud of that. And those, you know, the teachers are in loco parentis, as you know yourself, but many of them have to contend with problems that were not known before, that are quite exacting on their judgment, or quite exacting on the pressures on them. And yet world is moving so fast and so in such a sophisticated fashion that it's really important that they get the very best opportunity out of the time they have. You know, I was saying recently, when I finished the Leaving Cert, you kind of said to yourself, well, what are the options here? Not that many. When you look at the thousands of students coming out of primary and secondary schools now, and you say, you know, what are they going to do? Where are they going to be in 5-20 years' time? What are the issues in society that they're going to have to lead on when they take up their responsibilities as adults? And the importance of teaching and of education is critical for all of that. So it's a gift to be able to impart to others, but it's only the start of giving them their journey, their opportunity to travel the planes of knowledge.
Absolutely.
Or planes of information.
And you've mentioned there like leading and the leadership. So I suppose from your vast experience of leadership in government roles, what do you think? What are the pieces of...
Yeah, well, I think it's, put it this way, if you're teaching a lesson to primary students, to young boys and girls, like what are the objectives of your lesson? How are you explaining this to them in words and language that they can understand? So when you take over or have had the opportunity to be elected to government, unfortunately at the worst economic recession that we've experienced for very many years. So what were you going to do? What was your objective here? Well, it was to give hope and optimism and confidence that you could deal with the problem. Then identify what the problem was, fix your banks, you know, reduce your public expenditure, create jobs that would pay, that people would generate taxes to provide services for the country in general. So you had to set out that objective again and again and again so that it became part of the mantra that this is what the job of government was about. And you learn that by in being able to present that through the teaching profession. In other words, go back to your basics. What are the objectives here? What are your priorities? Here's the strategy that we're going to follow to achieve those objectives, and bring people with you and say, here's the rate of unemployment. Here's the deficit being reduced. Here's our credit rating improving. Here are interest rates dropping, all in the interest of the country. So it's a basic teaching capacity to say, what do I want to tell them? How do I explain the strategy? How do I prove to them that we're serious about implementing change that is in the country's interest?
Yeah, and I think the teacher training really does set students up to have very transferable skills, as you've just outlined, in many different aspects and many different roles.
Yes, and it's like, you know, a parent will say about their children, well, I'm going to give them the opportunity to play all sports, all the different things. And so they go from one to the other, and without mentioning anyone in particular. And by the time they get, you know, 10 or 11 years of age, they decide themselves, what's for me? So it's the same if you spark the inquisitiveness and the curiosity early on, they would say, well, I think I'd like to do this. Now, it's very true that many students today will graduate in something that they don't want to do or that they don't like after a very short time. But because we're now in a very different position, there are so many modules that you can move through to follow whatever you want to do. So really, I think it's critical in a world that's moving so fast that young people be happy in what they're doing. And, you know, thanks be to God, they've now got the opportunity to follow through different routes to a point where they can be happy at what they do and that they can make their contribution. Because, you know, one of the worst things you can have is where people are sort of pressurized into something that they really don't want and that they don't like, and that it becomes, you know, a point of depressing them and that they have to do it. So they've got the capacity to change now. And it's always good to say, well, have the courage to change. And sometimes courage requires failing also before you can achieve whatever is your success and whatever you feel happy about.
I always think of that quote, that if you're going to fail, fail better each time and continue to do better.
Well, it's not to be afraid that, you know, nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes. And in setting out any strategy, you're going to find there are difficulties along the way. So a young student would say, well, you know, I'm going to do subject X or Y. This is going to be my profession. They might do accountancy and find that's not for me at all. I want to go into a different form of business. Might be I want to run a restaurant. I want to do farming. Which are a very sophisticated set of subjects that are required to comply with all the regulations these days. But it's whatever they're happy at. But the good thing is that the opportunities are there now in a myriad of ways to work here, to work abroad, to get experience, to come back, but to contribute, live their lives.
And if you had one piece of advice for future teachers, what would that piece of advice be?
I would say to young teachers, never underestimate the importance and the impact that you can make on young minds, and work with them. It's not just being a teacher anymore. It's being a guider. It's being a pilot. It's being a counselor. It's being a demonstrator. It's being a friend. As I said earlier on, showing them where to look, but not what they should see. They'll discover that for themselves.
And just to finish up, if you had a magic wand and you could make three changes to education or anything you'd like to see developed over the next maybe 20 years, what kind of changes would you like to see happen?
Well, you're talking about the future, because you never know what are going to be the issues in the next in the next period ahead. You look at the Industrial Revolution. You could say that the 18th century was Europe's, 19th century would have been probably Europe's as well, 20th America's, and 21st century will be Asia's. So what are going to be the big issues here? Now, what changes would you make? You'd like to think that the research and the discoveries that we've made about the difficulties that people have can be dealt with by resources being put in an economy that's functioning well. We have people trained to get the best out of everybody. That's one. I think we should never lose sight of our language capacity. It makes us stand out as individuals, as people from a particular country. It contains in its own way the richness of our history and our folklore and our culture, our songs and stories and history. It's something that we should never lose. And I suppose to send out that signal that while we might have been branded as an island of saints and scholars, that in the scholar end of it, at least, we have a reputation that we can still maintain. I remember climbing Kilimanjaro a number of years ago, And one of the porters who were carrying up all the stuff said to me that he was educated by a man from Tipperary. So reputations out there, I think we should never lose that either.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Enda. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.